Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I want to welcome all of you to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Our guest this evening is Dan Willis, and I'll bring Dan on the air immediately. Dan, how are you this evening?
Great, Mark. Hey, enjoy being on the show with you.
It's always a pleasure to chat with you. What's new and exciting?
Oh, new and exciting. I'm not sure how to answer a question like that.
I've been working on my website. Why don't you tell the listeners about your website?
Oh, this was sprung out of a company out of Hollywood wanting me to write an article on media control, in which I got another education in having to put the pieces together. It's at www.thewebmatrix.net.
Thewebmatrix.net. Did you build this all from scratch yourself, or are you using a template or WordPress or any tools?
Oh, just, something like Dreamweaver, just an HTML program. It's a very basic site. A lot of pictures, kind of going in a chronology of how the world has gotten to be the way it is today.
Yeah. And by that, I imagine you mean how the world got to be in this fantastically wonderful state that we're in right now?
Yeah. I was just thinking about, taking a look at how if you were an evil ruler, how you would do it, If, let's say you have this country that's formed by the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights and all those wonderful values that the forefathers, put in, and that everybody in the military swears an allegiance to, protecting the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. If you were a domestic intruder, how would you be able to infiltrate a country like that?
You know what? What I would like to do, if I had billions of dollars or even trillions of dollars, what I think I would start doing is buying up all the beautiful land just to keep people from developing it and fracking on it and things like that. That's my fantasy anyway. I don't see how I'm ever going to be able to do that, but...
Well, yes, all of a sudden you'll be the landlord of the entire planet.
That's my goal, man. I would love that.
Just so long as you're a good landlord, the planet will be happy, But the landlords that are running the planet right now, with oil spills and Fukushima, we could be doing a lot better to the Earth being that we're residing on.
Oh, that's so true. I listened to a very interesting show. I don't know if you have ever heard of Jim Fetzer, Dr. Jim Fetzer. He's kind of a 9/11 John F. Kennedy assassination expert, and he has a really interesting blog. If you Google Radio Fetzer, you can just pick up some tremendous shows. He had a very interesting show on Fukushima. He interviewed a professor from Arizona State that knew a lot about nuclear power, and she was talking about some of the problems that they're seeing in the Pacific Ocean now and some of the damage to the various plants and animals. And it's so interesting because the public is so completely unaware of that. And so we're so preoccupied, don't you think?
I'm fairly aware because I'm a radiation remote monitoring station up here on this off-grid mountaintop, and so I
wow.
see all the. I signed up, and I'm since I'm an internet provider here for the valley, I'm just feeding the radiation data into a network at netc.com. People don't trust all of the government radiation monitoring stations. So this is kind of a, you know, because sometimes they take everything down, everything disappears ever so often.
Well,
so this is sort of more of civilian operations monitoring, and it's out of control over there. You know, it's and there's gag orders and people committing suicide, and you know, just we don't. The sad thing about this, Mark, is we haven't needed nuclear power plants for like 60 years. But, you know, people don't understand the cabal is controlling the release of, they're not releasing the technologies that, you know, I went to Washington to testify about.
Well, let me ask you about this. What kind of, where you're living there, up on that hill, that mountain, is it a mountain?
Well,
living?
It's sort of a big hill.
A very big hill. And it's, you're saying it's a remote radiation monitoring station?
Well, you know, anybody can do it. You just, you get a radiation detector, get it so it has an airflow, and then you feed it through either computer. I use a little BlackBerry device, Raspberry rather. Got my berries mixed up. And it feeds to the internet, you know, and so you can watch and see across the country when radiation spikes. So, you know, it just gives you not that I'm paranoid or anything. I like to be aware of my environment and what's going on, you know. So I just, there wasn't any monitoring station for hundreds of miles, so I figured I better fill in the gap here.
I have a Geiger counter. Is your system using a Geiger counter some way?
Well, yeah, you know, they're all Geiger counters. You know, they're hooked into the system. You know, some are go into alpha radiation. Mine just does you know, the beta and gamma radiations. But
now,
you know, they have classified technologies in these black projects that can remediate all this radiation. They can,
really?
They can convert it back so it's completely safe and inert. But, you know, that appears not to be the plan. It's just a matter of people becoming aware of the false reality that everyone's been indoctrinated into. And as so long as, you know, like the Nazis, you know, the Weltanschauungskrieg, the worldview warfare that they planned back before the end of the war, the infiltrate into the United States, which they did through the CIA and NASA, and basically got all their people in place and controlled the media by 1950 with Operation Mockingbird with Alan Dulles. And now, you know, the CIA controls all the distribution of all the information, connecting with the Tavistock Institute, with their think tanks, to, in fact, I have an interesting little clip about the Easter Bunny.
Yeah.
somebody took all the TV stations across the United States, ABC, NBC, CBS, and whatnot.
Yeah.
And this shows how the distribution of all the information to all the different networks are basically controlled by a distribution, which is through the CIA, that all the information, everybody basically just reads the same script. And here, I'm just going to play this short one.
Consumer news, economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny step this year.
Economic factors may take some spring out of the Easter Bunny.
Anyway, I'm not going to play the whole thing. The whole thing's actually about a minute and 20 seconds long. But what's interesting is that it shows that all your anchormen and newspaper reporters, they're all basically getting their information from one source.
It sounds like brainwashing, doesn't it? It's just the same thing repeated over and over again.
Well, it's more the idea that everybody is using the exact same verbiage. You know, the Easter Bunny may lose some spring of its step this year. You know, it's just that the script that they're reading doesn't matter if it's ABC, NBC, CBS. You know, they are all being fed the same script, the same language. So that could be about anything. You know, it could be like a threat to go to war. It could be a terrorist thing. It could be about the Easter Bunny. It could be about finances. It could be anything. But it manipulates the perception of everybody listening to it according to the verbiage that is given by the distribution.
It's just so amazing. We're just so controlled. Everything is just a big scam, isn't it?
Well, I have a 25-second clip here of Amber Lyon, who was a 3-time Emmy Award-winning journalist for CNN, and you know, basically, people are getting paid to create the news. It's not a journalism. Here's a clip from that.
What CNN is doing is they're essentially creating what some people have termed infomercials for dictators. And that's the sponsored content that they're airing on CNN International that's actually being paid for by regimes and governments. I mean, this violates every principle of journalistic ethics because we're supposed to be watchdogs on these governments. We're not supposed to allow them to be paying customers as journalists.
Yeah, this is because the perception is controlled. You know, just recently, I was looking at Russia Today, this Dr. Yudo Yokolti, I think I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he was for 25 years a senior journalist. And he is basically saying, I'll just play a little clip of that, about basically the CIA is having all these journalists and reporters write the scripts in the way that they want to present the information, and that all these journalists and things are getting paid off, and they're what are called as an unofficial cover, where it means that they're actually working for the CIA, creating the stories the way the CIA is dictating the script. But if they ever busted on it, then the CIA disavows any knowledge of them. I'll just play that little clip here.
Well, I've been a journalist for about 25 years, and I was educated to lie, to betray, and not to tell the truth to the public. Now, you asked, what have I done for intelligence agencies? So please see, most of the journalists you see in foreign countries, they claim to be journalists, and they might be journalists, European or American journalists, but many of them, like me in the past, are so-called non-official cover. That's what the Americans call that. I have been a non-official cover. Non-official cover means what? It means you too work for an intelligence agency. You help them if they want you to help them, but they will never, never, when they find out that you are not only a journalist but a spy too, they will never say, oh, this was one of our guys. They will not know you. That means non-official cover. I give you an example, not the German foreign intelligence, Bundesnachrichtendienst. It is just a sister organization of the Central Intelligence Agency. It was founded by the American Intelligence Agency. So one day, the BND, this German Foreign Intelligence Agency, came to my office at the Frankfurter Allgemeine in Frankfurt, and they wanted me to write an article about Libya and about Colonel Muammar Gaddafi. I had absolutely no secret information regarding Colonel Muammar Gaddafi and Libya, but they gave me all these secret information, and they just wanted me to write, to sign the article with my name. I did that, but it was an article that was published in the Frankfurt Allgemeine, that originally came from the Bundesnachrichtendienst, from the German Foreign Intelligence Agency. So do you really think that this is journalism, intelligence agencies writing articles?
Yeah, I just thought I'd play that. He just came out, you know, he was saying at the end of the thing, he says, look, I'm single, I have no children, I've had two heart attacks, and, you know, but he said, you know, that it just bothering on his conscience that he's been lying, you know, to the public, you know, in accord to how the intelligence agencies are dictating the script. You know, he was just one of, he was a, you know, reporter in Germany, but he's writing pro-American things. So he just came out this year, just recently, as a whistleblower that,
so,
you know, again, the CIA is controlling the media.
So is the CIA controlling the media in the U.S. and in other countries?
Oh, well, apparently it seems that, you know, such as, you know, when JFK fired Alan Dulles, who was CIA director, he was doing all these little things behind these operations and things, because he was basically tied into the Nazis. You know, he was there when you know, representing the law firm that was representing the German bank that funded Hitler. He was there at the meeting in 1933. And then, you know, when he got in control of in the CIA along with General Donovan, they were lying to President Truman and bringing in these people who were a danger to the threat of, you know, national security in the United States, and rewriting their paperwork and then releasing like 5,000 Nazis and then bringing 3,000 Nazi spy network into the CIA. And here they have the perfect cover, because Truman set it up so that there's no congressional oversight. They can do whatever they want in secrecy, you know. And so inch by inch, they've been gaining more and more control. You know, 1954, when Eisenhower did that secret executive order that replaced the old MJ-12 and replaced it with a new one, as, you know, Alan Dulles was put in MJ-1 position, which, you know, controlled the extraterrestrial issue and technologies. You know, then that was like 1954. That's when the first Bilderberg meeting over in the Netherlands, headed by Prince Bernhard, a former Nazi SS officer. Anyways, all connected with the banking elite and the Nazis and how they planned to basically infiltrate, as Kennedy warned, into the United States, as Eisenhower warned. And what they would do is manipulate the perception of many, many generations through control of, they rewrote the history books in 1946, right after World War II of 1945, and so the new generations would not have a clue what really happened at the end of World War II, just what they wanted them to perceive. And then with, you know, the corporations, what, it was like 1983, we had 50 corporations. Now there's like four or five that control every piece of information that's going out on all the television networks. And so, you know, this is like Operation Mockingbird on steroids. And so everybody's born into this indoctrination of this false agreed upon reality when they have a secret space program and a breakaway civilization, while they keep the rest of humanity on this planet retarded and damaging this beautiful planet, which really pisses me off.
I don't blame you. It pisses me off too. I have a question from the chat room. I'm not sure if you're willing to answer this question, but I'll throw it at you.
Sure.
Free Energy Grids asks, I'm wondering if Dan had personal contact experience with either UFOs or ETs.
Wow, that's a personal question.
it was.
well, actually, I had a number of ET experiences, both physical and out-of-body type of things. I had one fly 100 feet above my head late at night on a lonely Arizona mountain road with my brother, yanked me out of the truck, said, look, look, look. And this thing flew about 100 feet above our head. It was circular. It made a right angle turn. It was had a greenish hue to it. It was like white with a greenish hue, totally quiet. And this shot across the desert. He was either, you know, military or, you know, a secret project or, you know, an ETV, extraterrestrial vehicle. But I did have an experience in 1976. I was supposed to do a past, you know, a regression, hypnotic regression, and I had this Kundalini experience. And there's a being with a very large head, and large loving eyes, a very positive thing that was. It was like a high-speed alien download. It's kind of hard to explain, but he projected the sphere in space and was relating the idea of the geometry of consciousness and how we evolve from one geometric frequency vibration to the next through love. And and then I had this other very interesting experience where I was on board a craft and the head leader is like all the beings in the craft. They were like, I can't explain it other than they seemed like wise old men, but at the same time they were childlike, you know, and kind of playful. So, but there was like, they were all like one mind and put me through some kind of spinning vortex. I don't know how to describe it. Like you're sitting on a chair that's got a huge motor on it, somebody got speed control, and they're cranking that thing up until you can't handle it anymore. And it was like teleported, it was beautiful reality. And then I started to become aware as reality was starting to flicker that what they were showing was that reality is actually made up of these pulsations. It's like the frames on the movie projector, you know, it's going click, 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 click. Reality is being projected continually, and that they were showing me how we actually have the ability to change reality. And so this has gotten me more into, in fact, all that got me into deep metaphysical study many years ago, and working with a lab with Dr. Marcel Vogel a number of very interesting projects. But, you know, after being a, you know, top secret military witness and attempting to, you know, support others, the 500 other witnesses that Dr. Greer put together, because the government's been infiltrated and the CIA director can't even gain access, is why that whole thing came about. But, you know, well, it's like all the channels for change have been compromised.
Let me ask you a couple
and
questions
about
your experiences. The first one where you saw the craft that was 100 foot over your head, was that sighting at night?
Yeah. I was coming up out of Gila Bend, and we're going up to the Hopi Reservation. I just finished working for 13 years in Naval Electronic Engineering Center on military satellite stuff, and I was going with my brother, and we're up a lonely, dark mountain road late at night. I've been driving for hours, and he got out and stretched, and he saw it when it was coming up from Mexico, I guess from far away, did shoop, and then it went right over the top of us, and then did this right angle turn and shot out. You know, it was like totally quiet.
Did you have?
And I've seen him. I've seen him before.
Did you have any missing time when you were in that, with that experience?
Not that experience, but I did have, after I went to Washington, Jaime Musan invited me to be on Telemundo Television in Mexico, and it was a big auditorium, about 6,000-7,000 people, and I was saying on the Telemundo Television Network for Mexico, I said, you know, Mexico City, all the pollution, I said, there is technologies that can alleviate that can be released, that we're, you know, trying to have a congressional hearing on. And then when I drove back and with my Porsche and my friend who was bilingual, I needed down there, it was like midnight and we had 3 hours of missing time. he got into his house and he noticed the clock was saying 4 a.m., but we left at exactly midnight. And where I went, you know, I thought the clocks had stopped, you know, that it must have been a power outage, I thought. And for some reason, and I tried to do a hypnotic regression with somebody who, you know, tried to see what happened, where did what happened in the 3 hours, but I don't know. I have no memory recollection of it. And a friend of mine in San Diego, when I was out on the street talking to her, she said that a UFO hit. I know this sounds insane, but
it
hit me with a blue... with a blue beam of light, and she said, I don't remember any of it, and I don't. I don't remember any of it, and it's interesting that Captain Robert Salas, a nuclear launch officer, he was at the National Press Club with me in 2001 to testify about the nukes being shut down by the ET craft, and he's just coming out saying that a blue beam came through his window and he was taken aboard in an abduction type of thing and you know, worked on by some ETs. And he's coming out saying that, you know, because he's a very credible individual. Here he's, you know, in charge of nuclear weapons, you know, pretty trustworthy individual, not be crazy or anything. So,
can I tell my little beam story quickly and then let you continue. When I was about 8 years old, I used to have this, for lack of a better word, it looked like a craft to me that would sometimes hover not far outside my window at night when I would be looking out the window gazing at the stars. And it got closer on subsequent evenings. This went on for a couple months. And I would have my father, you know, I would yell for my father. He'd run in. Sometimes he'd see it, sometimes he wouldn't. And sometimes I'd have these, like, telepathic contacts with it. Whatever it was, whatever beings were in that ship, I don't know. They were very, very intelligent, I'll tell you that. But my father tells me, all I remember is seeing an orange light come in the window. But my father told me, and he wouldn't talk about it much because it really... it disturbed him. His face would turn white as a ghost. And he said an orange beam came in the window, and then he described me kind of fading out, he called it. And that's about basically all he would say, and I could never get him to tell me much more than that. But anyway, I thought I would throw that in since you were talking. I don't know what to make of it, Dan. I don't really know what to make of it at all.
Wow. No wonder you're doing weird talk shows now.
I know. It took how many years, though?
It's always interesting to find out the stories behind everybody. Everybody, you know, that gets into this kind of stuff. It's kind of like when we're doing these talk shows, it's kind of like, you know, not that we're preaching, but, you know, as I say, preaching to the choir is like everybody's kind of on the same page. Most people understand that, you know, that went way past the earth being flat and that we're not at the center of the universe, and now that there's millions of other life forms all over the place, and that, you know, like Clifford Stone said in 89, they categorized over 57 different species that are interacting with Earth, and who knows, maybe they got up to 80 now, who knows. But
did you say Robert Salas is saying that he was hit with a blue beam and taken aboard a craft?
Yeah. In fact, it was an article he wrote. Yeah, it was talked about it. I was really impressed that he was so open with, you know, something like that. But, you know, he's a solid guy, and
I
joined with him.
You know what I mean? He's a very conservative guy. That took a lot for him to say that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I come from a conservative family. My father was a career Marine. In the Korean War, he took 28 down helicopters and made 14 perfect ones out of it. got a presidential citation, used to bring out the American flag all the time, and, you know, he's like real super patriotic, you know, love the country and everything, and, you know, and then Kennedy got shot, and then all of a sudden LBJ escalated the war in Vietnam, and so, you know, I ended up over in Vietnam.
How long were you in Vietnam?
Oh, just a year. A year is long enough, though.
Did you see combat over there?
Yeah, I was being shot at. You know, they gave me a medal for being shot at. But, I was on a riverboat repair barge where we had to throw hand grenades off the side every 3 minutes because the Viet Cong were swimming down with the lily pads and blew up our sister ship, and I had to take an M16 and shoot the lily pads. I was in charge of the communication shack, you know, taking messages. The job of it was to patch up the riverboats. You know, riverboats would get all shot up by the Viet Cong, and then we'd weld them back up and fix them and send them back up the river to get shot up again.
War's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, make love, not war, as I say.
I knew a buddy that he wasn't like a real good friend, but I would talk to him fairly often at one of the gyms I worked out in Cincinnati. I remember his name. I better not use it since we're on the air. I don't know if that would be appropriate or not, but he was a real big guy, big weightlifter guy, and he was also tall. And he would tell the story of the first day he got in Vietnam. The plane that he flew in on, he was flying with a bunch of other, you know, people that were in the military and the army there, and they turned off all the lights on the plane, and it was being shot at, and they landed.
Oh, it was a rocket attack. He must have been on the same plane I was. I'm just kidding, but with the day I flew in, it was under, you know, Saigon was under a rocket attack. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, the base he was staying at was under attack. So the first night he was in Vietnam, he had to grab his M16 and go to the front line. Can you believe that? Anyway, I digress. But it was an amazing story when he told it.
Well, you know, after Vietnam, I realized the CIA came to my door, you know, because I had a high-level top secret clearance in the military, and I was good at what I did. And they offered me a job in Londonderry, Ireland, but I refused. That I'd never want anything to do with anything that, after I saw what was going on in Vietnam, my heart goes out to all the young guys that are having a deal in the Middle East. You know, the post-traumatic stress and that they're going through is like, you know, what is behind these wars? You know, it's like more and more people are waking up to, you know, like the Nazis tried to overtake our government in 1933 with J.P. Morgan, Rockefeller, and another asshole, but where he was. But, you know, General Smedley Butler, they thought was going to go along with the whole deal. And instead, he just infiltrated the plot and exposed him, or else we would have been a Nazi government in 1933. But he said, you know, war is a racket. You know, it's where cost of many lives at the profit of a few. And if you understand, like Amber Lyons was saying about how they're beating the war drum to do this or to manipulate the perception, as General Donovan, the head of OSS back then, he said they were going to do full spectrum dominance to completely manipulate the perception and engineering consent of the populace with the all-important calculated application of fear and terror. You know, because what the Nazis, when they were surveying the United States, they found that the United States population was very susceptible to fear propaganda. And so they knew that they could manipulate the public perception. And this whole thing started by Rockefeller funding an H.G. Wells novel that was played out by Orson Welles on the radio in 1938. And what it was a psychological study. 6 million people listened to it. 1.7 million actually took action and thought that the Martian invaders were coming in, and they were, like, you know, buckering down with their shotguns and everything. And another 1.7 or something million, you know, believed it was true, but didn't take any action. So they wrote a book after it, saying the psychology of, you know, fear and terror. And so what they were doing is they were analyzing, and they were also analyzing Hitler and the propaganda that Joseph, you know, Goebbels was doing, that and how the influence was. And so all of this, and everybody that's tied in deeply with the CIA is all connected with the Tavistock Institute, with billions of dollars of these, all these thousands of think tanks that are all putting this information together, tied in with the mainstream media, to, in order to gain our perception. And, you know, the 30-year veteran of the NSA, one of the head cryptologists, William Binney, just recently this year, said the main, who quit because he was disgusted with what the Bush administration did with the NSA. So the main purpose of the NSA is for population control. He just made that statement. Here's a high level. He didn't leak any documents. He just quit. Unlike Snowden, who said that, you know, the sole motive that he did that was to let the American people know what's being done in their name and what's being done against them. So the intelligence community, which is tied into the NSA, CIA, NRO, National Reconnaissance Organization, in which one of the witnesses that joined me in Washington, you know, he was aware, Daniel Morris. Actually, there was 21 witnesses. When he got up to the mic, he kind of, with the 22 cameras in the back row all looking at him and the whole place packed, he kind of lost it. So there's actually only 20 testimonies. But he testified that James Forrestal, who sent Admiral Byrd down to destroy the Nazi base back in 1947, I believe, or 1946, that was down under Antarctica, Admiral Byrd came back, and he had hush orders. He was a 33rd degree Mason, which is interesting, but he was mumbling about it in the hospital because he was having a nervous breakdown, and he testified that they murdered him and threw him out the window because they were afraid he was going to spill the beans. And he was, you know, one of the main members of the original MJ-12 that was replaced when Eisenhower did that executive agreement. So now, you know, the thing that gets me is that burned memo. Are you familiar with that? Where an intelligence operative was able to rescue it out of the fire, and it was basically a Majestic 12 document that was Alan Dulles, head of the CIA, which was MJ-1, was talking to the other MJ members, saying that Kennedy was looking into their hidden operations, and that they cannot allow that, because he was planning on getting us off the Federal Reserve, stopping the Vietnam War, and dismantling the CIA and the drug operations that, you know, George H.W. Bush was involved with, you know, Zapata Oil, bringing in a lot of drug money. And all this money, trillions of dollars, being brought in through, you know, the illegal drug channels that are funneling in, and also the money with the global elite that's channeling into this research that they've been doing since, you know, that this was back in the 40s, that those already have the advanced faster-than-light craft. They've got, you know, just as, let's see, I have one little clip by Mark McCann, it's just 20 seconds long, where he's talking about the alien reproduction vehicles they had back in the 50s.
Personally witnessed three flying saucers at a very large hangar at Norton Air Force Base. Presentation that Brad talked about was for top military brass and certain congressional, but the fact that there were three discs at that exhibit, these discs were hovering off the floor without any visible means of support. They were referred to as alien reproduction vehicles.
You know, he brought he was a technical illustrator for the, you know, the military-industrial complex, I guess you call it. And
can
he
I,
brought a detailed diagram
of that. Can I throw a question in? Can I throw a question in, Dan? And this comes from the chat room.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to rant on.
That's okay. There's a question from the chat room that Nate asked. How can we change our reality? Because you said in your contact that there were some ETs that showed you how to change reality. Can you go back over that again?
Oh, yeah, okay. You know, that's an interesting thing because Dr. Marcel Vogel, who, you know, started after, he was the head scientist at IBM, and he started what's called Psychic Research Incorporated, which I helped him, you know, procure some of the lab equipment. He had a full-on electron microscope. We worked on the Myers material samples that you're familiar with. And one thing he said is that there's an oscillation that occurs in the brain, and it's interesting. You know, when you look at a 60-cycle fluorescent light, it's actually flashing off and on 60 times a second, but your eyes only perceive anything over 30 times a second, it perceives as being solid and on. So reality is something like that, where it's, you know, as Einstein said, reality is an illusion, but a persistent one at that. And that's somewhat of the nature of what they were showing me, is that as I looked at this beautiful reality that I was on top of this beautiful hill with it was like a spring day with grass and flowers, and, you know, just like your most euphoric, beautiful day type of experience. And then as I'm observing the reality, all of a sudden it looked like it started to flicker. Flick, 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 flick. And then what it showed is in between the frames of the reality. And then I became aware that I was, you know, the ETs, you know, whatever this was, you know, I was in like in a movie theater looking at my conscious projection up on a silver screen. And as I'm looking at myself creating this movie, you know, I kind of just jokingly said, okay, so I'm creating this movie, so what's the name of the movie? You know, and it writes in this beautiful script, you know, Journey of a Mystic, you know. And then I'm aware that, wow, I'm in this, they brought me up into this incredible level of consciousness. I don't know how to describe it other than I was looking at life like through the eyes of a child with great, enthrallment with everything. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that, okay, I could go back into my body and open my eyes and bring this consciousness into my physical body. And I was able to do that. And it lasted for, you know, maybe about 30 minutes, and I had to realize I had to go to work and pay bills and, you know, do stuff. But, you know, what it seems as though it was like a teaching experience that reality is being projected from our consciousness. And I believe that since the channels for change out there have been compromised. You know, you can go to Washington, you can try to testify, you can try to contact the media, you can write to your representatives, you can protest, you know, you can do all these things till you're blue in the face. But it seems that all the channels for change have been compromised, and it seems that the one thing that they're deathly afraid of is that we become aware of the spiritual power that we have within us to change that reality. You know, the Nazis discovered, you know.
Did you have this material? Sorry, Dan, didn't mean to interrupt you. Did you have this experience when you were meditating, or this experience where you saw the movie?
Oh, I came home for a lunch break from work, and I just kind of like was kind of exhausted, and I flopped down, and then all of a sudden I was having this extremely lucid experience, out of body type of thing.
Was that a life changing
time? It left, and you know how you have a certain dream or something, and it leaves a but like more than a dream kind of thing. You know, it leaves an impression on you.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that one where I had that Kundalini thing where millions of volts are going through my hands and my feet, and this being is projecting this thing. I had no idea. I didn't take geometry in school. I had no idea about any of this stuff. I had this huge hunger to try to understand everything I could about what the being was conveying. Then all of a sudden, I was grabbing every book I could on the subject of sacred geometry, that what was available in 1976. And I started to find out, wow, the Pythagorean five solids, that one fits exactly in where the points of one fits into the other and into the other. And then the first design that I saw projected in the sphere looked like a Merkaba, which was, I didn't even know what a Merkaba was or anything, like a six-pointed with the two tetrahedral. And, you know, it turns out that, you know, it's on the planet, on the sun, on our Mars, Jupiter, all the planets, and even our own bodies have this energetic geometric field around us that is somehow connected to our consciousness.
That's interesting. That's really fascinating, Dan. So you had these two experiences, and do you feel they were of extraterrestrial nature?
Well, one, I never ever saw, I never was aware of, you know, the typical ET type of thing with a very large cranium and extremely large eyes, a very small little mouth, you know, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I never ever was exposed to that. And so, you know, the hypnotherapist is like taking me through, and I'm describing this, and I'm getting this like these millions of volts going through my hands and feet. I'm describing what I'm seeing, and it's this incredible. It's as though they had to jump start me up to a higher vibrational level in order to interact with this being. As this being had like intense energy, is putting it mildly. The energy from the eyes was extremely loving.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to share that. It was extremely loving and wise. And so, you know, it's what led me to drive all the way from San Diego up to San Jose to meet with Dr. Marcel Vogel, because he was the only scientist that was really, this was a top-level scientist that created the red and blue phosphors on color television, the magnetic coating that everybody uses on hard drives. He had like 140-some patents. He was a brilliant scientist. And, you know, he had an experience with this plant communication, and found out he could replicate what Cleve Baxter, the CIA polygraph expert, did with plants. And he was able to affect that plant not only from 7 miles from his laboratory, but all the way from Prague, Czechoslovakia. And then he found out that the crystals cut in a specific angle in order to cohere the energies of thought. He opened up this laboratory, and he invited me to be, you know, an assistant. And one of the things I worked on was this Delaware camera from 1950s in England that could take photographs of somebody based on just the DNA that's in the blood spot or, you know, hair as a witness, they call it, where you could be on the other side of the planet. And he's like, Delaware took like thousands and thousands of these photographs. One's on the website, the webmatrix.net, that shows a fetus, you know, inside of a woman. And the interesting thing about this camera was that it could go forwards and backwards in the time with a time spiral, where he could progress it forwards and backwards. It was like, I've never seen, you know, a radionic. I've had a lot of experience with radionic instruments and things, but not like this one. It's patented by the European Patent Office, but everybody had difficulty in operating it. We were trying to bring it up to the current level of technology, at least in 1984.
Are you? Are you talking about a camera that can look forward or backward in time?
Yeah, it proves the fact that the universe is holographic. In other words, in any part of the universe is the entire universe. So, in other words, if you have like a, you know, like they did in voodoo, you know, with a hair or fingernail clippings or whatever, it's the DNA signature, the vibratory energy of that that links to you wherever you are in the universe. And they're able to tune into that. They use sound resonators and these brass dials, and they turn it in a particular angle, and it would attune to the person, and it would form on the silver emulsion on the photographic plate in the chamber that was above. This thing stood about 5 feet tall. This is big, with sound oscillators in it. And it would take photos. And Ruth Brown in Hollywood did the same thing.
It could take photos of the past.
Well, it could take photos. It may, mainly you could take photos of what you're tuning into. Like, say you're tuning into a person's heart or something. It would show the image of their heart. Or like he was tuning into the fetus of the woman. It would capture that on the silver emulsion of the film. And we were trying to bring it into higher level of technology, that understanding the principles when we were basically CADing it out. You know, well, it was
so,
kind of like old-fashioned CAD back then. I found golden section harmonies inside the sound cavities. So we were reverse engineering, essentially.
So that camera was taking photographs of things that weren't physically there.
Right, because of the holographic nature of reality. It was attuning using a witness, they call it, and setting the dials to the aspect. It's like in a circle, a 360 circle, you could say you could tune into the entire universe, because the nature of the universe is, you know, as above, so below. It goes into infinity. In a macro-microcosmic scale that's somewhat fractal, as revealed in nature, where the golden mean ratio is, you know, going into infinity. And so if you tune into one aspect, you tune into every aspect of it. And so that's why I believe the more people become conscious and aware that all of us are connected on a higher level, and that each of our consciousness, you can see it everywhere. You can see people becoming aware of the deceptions that have happened in the world, and I'm aware that there is something much more. Like, it's like in the movie The Matrix, you know, where the glitch is happening. You know, there's something else going on here that's not exactly truthful. So, you know, that's why there was a huge conspiracy to take out the thing of consciousness in all the universities. The connection with it, because they were afraid we'd become aware and be able to change the agreed upon reality.
So Marcel Vogel's camera was focusing in somehow on the DNA of this person, and it was actually taking photographs of a heart, and this person was somewhere else geographically.
Well, in the photo I have an example of, it's actually a fetus inside of a pregnant woman.
Jeez.
And so that you can see the skeletal structure and everything. There was a lady named Ruth Brown that read the book The Kabbalah Unveiled, and she went to electronics. This is in the 50s, electronics store, and she put together an instrument based on the Tree of Life and the Sephira, you know, for the dials and everything. And she took a picture of a. I think he was in Ohio. Actually, he traveled over there. And she had a witness of him, and it turned out he had an operation where they left the forceps inside of him. And in the photograph, you could clearly see the forceps. Here she is in Hollywood. He's in Ohio, right? And so she was able to attune to him. So that's like a whole technology that I'm sure in the Black Projects they have way advanced it. But, you know, so much has been suppressed. You know, people like Raymond Royal Rife, who found out, you know, ways to oscillate and see living cells and in order to destroy cancers and everything. But, you know, the AMA and American Cancer Society, you know, came in and, you know, wiped out his laboratory. Just as scientists that I've met with, that this one scientist had a laboratory, was able to produce a huge amount of power from this crystal, but these guys came in like a SWAT team and cleaned it out. And he said, well, what charges? You know, he said, well, you're trespassing. You know, so they're trespassing on the oil, the nuclear, the coal cartels that maintain, you know, these dangerous industries that we haven't needed. And that was, you know, that was the whole reason I went to Washington, because I understood that. And, you know, the Earth is a living being, and we need to release the technologies to start repairing the damage.
This camera, again, I'm sorry I keep coming back to this. This camera that Marcel Vogel built, what was it actually tuning in on, Dan, since it wasn't tuning in on a visual image? Because the heart of the fetus wasn't there.
We're tuning on a vibrational level. You're tuning in on, like, say, in your hair. If it was to take a piece of your hair, right? Just like mm-hmm. witches do, you know, make you a love spell or worse. there's a DNA in that. And in the DNA, it's like a broadcast, you could say. And if you link to that, if you know how to link to that, you can affect that. From, like, the Radionic Association in England, they keep these thoroughbred horses healthy by using radionic witnesses that, you know, keep, at least they used to, you know, years ago. Everything has a vibrational link that you can link into. And so this camera basically took an aspect of that vibrational link by the tuning dials. And then what happened was the oscillations, you know, like in the beginning was the sound of the word, you know, and everything. It's like sound is creative. The sound of these oscillators, there was three of them in three different axes going up to the upper chamber, which had these reflective mirrors and lenses on it that would reflect the energy back down onto the photographic plates in a three-dimensional axis. So you can actually getting like three-dimensional kind of images on a 2D plate. You know, and this was, you know, this is 1950s England technology, you know. I mean, it's beautifully machined. The brass and everything was just done, you know, beautifully. But, you know, you can imagine the technologies, especially the Russians too, you know, that have done extensive work in understanding the connection of consciousness and matter.
That's truly phenomenal. Is Marcel Vogel dead?
Yeah, he died back in 91.
Yeah, that's sad, because he was really on to something there.
Oh, yeah. You know, he said to me one time, he said, Daniel, if we ever do something, a big breakthrough, the government would come in and clean out our lab. And I thought, you know, I didn't really know what to make of that statement. I didn't have any experience like I did afterward, after meeting with so many scientists who have had, like, national, over 5,000 patents have been suppressed by the CIA using national security, everything having to do with producing energy or solutions for the world. They suppress mm-hmm. that. Not only not release the technology, but they purposely suppress that. So yeah, he was doing some amazing stuff. You know, the winery, the Northern California, took a rot gut wine that was horrible. He took the essence and was able to program that into a crystal that was cut in such a way as to cohere the energies and oscillate. And then he had the wine in a stainless steel tube go seven right-hand turns around it. And he did process thousands of gallons. And what was going on is that the vibration, the quartz molecular structure has some kind of interesting thing happening. There's like a 52-degree angle, which relates to the golden mean, just like in the Great Pyramid, and it's the same angle the quartz grows. And then there's a half that and double that. They're like harmonic angles. And the harmonics of that are the same that's in water. That's why both water and quartz, they grow in hexagonal crystal forms. And the one's a liquid crystal, the other one's a solid crystal that's made up of tetrahedral lattice. And the tetrahedral lattice appears to be a fundamental structure. As, you know, when they dug down deep in the Antarctic, these cores, they found that in the water of the frozen ice, every single crystallographic form that's in nature can be exhibited, meaning that water is a universal resonant geometry, and the quartz is nothing more than a solid form of that, but there's a resonance that happens between the quartz and the water, and so they took the Rotgut wine. It won a California award. He made thousands of gallons out of it. Some Japanese company bought the winery since then, and so I don't know whatever happened after that. But you know, you couldn't really capitalize on it. He was trying to get money for the laboratory. You know, what do you say? This certain vintage of wine, a certain year has been crystal enhanced. You know, but you know. We're trying to figure out something that could be viable, that's practical in the world. Here where we feed our garden, I set up a similar situation, and I feed the plants and things with a set program that you can put nourishing. Basically, it's a matrix in which you can program with anything, and that's the work I'd love to see people. In fact, I'm thinking of putting up a Facebook like page with many of Marcel's work, because he was on the forefront of a new understanding of the interface and the geometry of consciousness, and how that interfaces with matter, and the more of an understanding of the structure of the matrix. That experience, by the way, I shared with you, I met a whole bunch of scientists in San Francisco in 2000. One of them was Nassim Harim, and I shared with him my experience and what the being showed me, and his response was, yeah, it's exactly the way the structure is. And, you know, he won an award for the quartz Schwarz-style particle or something, but he has some very interesting theories on the whole structure of the tetrahedral matrix of creation that each of us is experiencing through our own, I guess, DNA, you know, that comes from our, lack of better scientific terms, our soul. We're experiencing this.
Dan, I can't believe the hour's over already. It's such an interesting topic that we just started. Can I get you back on the show pretty soon so we could follow back up?
Oh,
with this?
I'd love to. Yeah, I love just rambling on about all kinds of nonsense. What I'd like to do is invite everybody to do a visualization. If you go to the webmatrix.net, on the links, there's this one called Imagine This, and it's kind of a visualization of the world. And I think you'll like it. It's a good bedtime story. And, you know, just keep the faith. Don't go into fear. And some people will tell you there's evil aliens out there. But there's a lot of really good ones out there, too.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, Dan. I always enjoy talking to you so much. Have a good evening, sir.
You too, Mark. All right. Have a good night.